you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, yeah.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Carlos Morales on the show. Carlos is a writer and a podcaster. He is a child's rights advocate who has spoken at Liberty Forum, Liberty Fest, and a host of shows regarding his experience as a child protective service investigator. He wrote a book about that called "Legally Kidnapped: The Case Against Child Protective Services." That's what's going to be our discussion tonight, or the topic we're going to talk about tonight. You also have a podcast, correct, Carlos?
Yes, sir. My podcast is Think About Now, although I have not done a show since last March, so this is actually my first basically podcast since then. Awesome. And but you can find 100, I think there's like 120 episodes on there, ranging from the topic of child protective services to homeschooling, government, the history of Islam. We really run the gamut, so definitely check out Think About Now at thinkaboutnow.com.
Great. Okay. And the Legally Kidnapped, you have a website for that too, right? Don't you?
Yeah, actually. And the easiest way to really find that book and just everything tied into it will make it easy for the audience. Go to carlosmorales.me. Again, carlosmorales.me. That'll help you find everything there.
Okay. Let's see here. Let me get an engineering thing here.
Cool.
My sound. Yeah, I want to be able to monitor the sound here. Okay. So, Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services, your experience as a child protective services investigator. Hey, what's wrong with an agency after protecting children from bad parents and predators?
Well, that's a great question. It's really a matter of, okay, so when someone brings up something like, let's say, the war on drugs, right? Up until a couple decades ago, when he brought up the war on drugs, people went, well, we need to prevent people from using drugs because it's doing bad things to them, right? It's causing them to beat their wives. It's causing them to run their cars, off the road, a bunch of terrible things, right? We all know drug addicts. We all know heroin addicts, or at least a lot of us do, especially if you go out to places like in New England where you end up finding this. But what we found over the decades, right, through a lot of research, is that the war on drugs has actually done a lot of good for drug dealers, in that it's actually made drugs a little bit cheaper, and they're actually more ample now than they've ever been. And in fact, the war on drugs has done the exact opposite of what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to stop drug use, and in fact has increased it, along with increasing a humongous government. Now, you know, I'm in the state of California right now. Very few people here are going to be defending, laws against, say, something like marijuana use. but they will jump and defend anything like, say, Child Protective Services, because in their minds, at least in a lot of people's minds, Child Protective Services does good, right? Because it's in the name, right? Just like something like, let's say, the Patriot Act. Who couldn't like the Patriot Act, right? But the thing to know about the government is that whenever it says it's going to do something, it usually does the exact opposite. Whether that's on purpose or not, I don't think it really matters. What matters are the results. The war on poverty has led to more poverty. The war on drugs has led to more drugs. And as far as, you know, taking care of old folks, it certainly hasn't done a very good job of that either, seeing as how most of us won't even be able to use our own Social Security that we've been paying to for, say, decades. When it comes to the topic of CPS, or Child Protective Services, this is a federal agency, right? Now, though this may seem like a tiny little thing, right, like, okay, CPS, not many people have to actually deal with them. If you think about the fact that there are over 400,000 children right now in Child Protective Services care, that starts to kind of allow you to open up your mind to how big of an issue this is, right? Because if you think 400,000 kids, it's a whole hell of a lot of children. Now, just like I've met people who've used drugs in my life, I've also met people who have hit their kids in my life, right? People who didn't treat their kids correctly. And that's what got me, inspired me to jump into working for Child Protective Services. So knowing that there's abuse, then therefore I should think maybe this organization is helping children. But a cursory glance at some of the statistics regarding how they are treating the children should show you quite quickly that they've done a pretty terrible job. And I'll just jump into a couple of stats just to kind of open up your mind, and then we can kind of decompress some of these in a little bit here. Foster kids who are supposedly cared for by Child Protective Services are 7 to 8 times more likely to be physically or sexually abused than children in impoverished households. I want you to hit that real quick again. 7 to 8 times more likely. That's a lot, right? Now, once these kids age out, once you get to the, say, age of 18, 50% of them are going to end up homeless. Okay? They have more cases of post-traumatic stress disorder than veterans of war. They are 3 times more likely to be placed on psychotropic medication than impoverished children. And they're 6 times more likely to die than children in impoverished households. This is after they've already been taken out of the house. And it's not a matter of not enough money as far as medical care. These children get an incredible amount of funding through government networks to pay for their medical care. But simply put, it is not being used properly, but instead going into the pockets of bureaucrats and people who I don't truly believe care about children. Now, so I just threw a lot of info right there, right? We have the foster homes, really bad situation. We have a lot of kids in here, 400,000. But I bet you there's a little thing in the back of your head that's going, well, but at least, you know, these kids were abused. Well, what's really important here is to make sure that the kids who are getting taken out of these homes are actually being abused. But it turns out about 80%, I show in a book that's about 100 pages, my book, Legally Kidnapped, the Case Against Child Protective Services, I have, I think, 82 sources. You know, I try to really push everything I can to show that it's true. But about 80% of the removals here are not for physical or sexual abuse. 80%, right? That's a whole heck of a lot. And the reason why a lot of these kids are getting pulled out of these homes is for actually something that I was just hitting on in the beginning of our discussion, which is the war on drugs. The fact of the matter is that the majority of these cases are for things like marijuana use, right? And they will classify that under negligence, even though there is no evidence to suggest that the use of marijuana is linked with worse parents by any means. We certainly know alcoholism is, but they go after parents who smoke weed, who homeschool, and we'll discuss this in a little bit here, in a lot of cases, false allegations. So I'll slow down and we can follow up from there.
Yeah, those are certainly troubling numbers, and I've heard those before, and I read them in your book. It wasn't the first thing that came across them. That it's obvious that the conditions in foster homes, just by the numbers, are far worse than in the homes that these kids were taken from. And the fact that you point out that these people are being taken out, these children are being taken out of for reasons that no normal person would consider really to be abuse, no reasonable person, but they take that term abuse and stretch it a mile long to justify these actions. I mean, alcohol, you know, is legal. I guess some states, marijuana is legal, I guess. But that doesn't protect the family.
It does not.
Yeah, because it can be a pretext for taking the child away. And, of course, that's just a suspicion of drug use, correct?
Yeah, that I mean, that's suspicion of drug use, although it really depends. I mean, we had these things called oral swab drug tests.
Mm-hmm.
So you could test someone, although we have found that in a lot of the cases – those are not necessarily accurate. On top of that, all someone would have to do is admit to weed use. Like I was, and the problem is that, you know, loose lips sink ships is what the government says, right? But that also goes for the tactics that are being used to get information out of people. You know, a lot of us have been raised, maybe not raised on, but have become accustomed to, you know, the Law and Order, you know, sexy victims unit. TV show, you know, that kind of version of investigations. Just a hardworking guy who's working 16 hours and he's too old for this shit. And
he's on the edge.
He's on the edge, but he knows what's right. He can tell. He doesn't. And if you notice in those shows, the worst thing, the most evil thing is not the perpetrators of crimes. It's the damn Constitution, right?
Yes.
Constitution is always getting in the way.
You got a lawyer up?
Cops. Yeah, doing their job.
Yeah,
and you know the truth is that hunches are pretty much, you know, crap. Most of investigation work is just people admitting to doing things, even in a lot of cases where they actually didn't do anything at all. It's a lot of leading questions, and even what we call, you know, great evidence right now. This is outside the family court thing. Whether that's, you know, fingerprint analysis, the biggest bollocks ever is a bite mark analysis. There's like, we have no efficacy showing that actually works. But you have all these people going to jail on all these different, based off of all these different government programs that are consistently failing. And then it takes decades for the government to respond in any kind of positive manner, because that would mean they'd actually have to admit some form of guilt and recompense in these particular cases, which of course they don't want to do. So when it comes to the topic of child protective services, you know, we have former cops out there who are saying, you know, some good stuff. Michael Rupert was one of them. He's dead now. And that, I don't think that was a result of the government, although I think some of that stuff kind of led him to go crazy. And we also have, you know, ex-soldiers who come out and say things regarding the government. We have people like Edward Snowden.
Well, I mean, that's harassment that you can be driven to. You can be driven to suicide. And actually, they've gotten that down to an art form, actually, to a science, rather.
Yeah, they really have. So you have these people, but after I got done with work at Child Protective Services, I realized there were no people out there talking about CPS in any meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say meaningful, I mean it's that kind of Democrat way of combating public education. You know, when people say like, the teachers just aren't funded enough. Our education system just doesn't get enough money.
Classes are overcrowded, yeah.
Yeah, all that. Even though there's like no correlation between class size and efficacy and results.
Yeah, when I was in elementary school, I was in a Catholic school that had 40 kids in the classroom. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's like what does this really have to do with anything? Yeah. So with these former CPS workers, you know, and they would say, oh, I'm a whistleblower. And you're just like, what do you mean by whistleblower? You just mean you're saying I work too hard and I'm not paid enough. That's called every single employee ever, right?
Yes.
Every person thinks they're working too hard and not getting enough money. And most people are normally on Facebook and are getting paid a fine amount of money for what they do. And so that was their way of coming out. For me, it was, you know, I needed to... You mentioned Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the kind of, I'm not even a Catholic, but I'm pretty sure I suffered from Catholic guilt pretty phenomenally. And when I feel as if something that I did was wrong, or I feel that there's something wrong going out there that I have some kind of control over, either dealing with or coming to terms with, then I need to do that, or else I literally cannot sleep. And it got to the point where I, you know, really came out against Child Protective Services for what I saw while working there, and for you know, kind of acknowledging my part to play in the bigger thing here. You know, a lot of us want to be the hero in our own life story. We want to attempt to be bigger than the thing we say we are when we're trying to get laid, right? we want to be more than that. And for me, it was, you know, I know I have a message. I know I can debate. I did debate in college. I know how to be able to handle a microphone, and I can write a fair bit. So that kind of inspired me to go down this wormhole of starting the podcast, talking about CPS, working with families. And then later on, as time went on, I started seeing these cases and cases and cases and cases. I mean, it was absurd, the amount of people. I mean, you know, kids getting taken out of homes because they went to go play outside for 5 minutes, things we would have done when we were kids. You know, I'm 30. This isn't that long ago that I could just go outside, and violent crime rates were actually higher then than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're less likely to be taken by a stranger than be hit by lightning unless that stranger works for the government.
Yeah, we had a they're called free-range children.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's actually a term. Yeah. And we had a case near where I live where an 11-year-old was walking an 8-year-old home, and a police officer took him into custody. And there's no law, by the way, in the books that justified this policeman's action. Got in the local paper, and there's some local outrage. Some people actually supported him because kids shouldn't be outside walking down the street alone. And the police officer said, "Well, I was worried they might be kidnapped." Well, they were kidnapped.
But when the government does it, it doesn't count because they have special badges and classes, and it's much like the Ku Klux Klan or Star Wars. You know, you got these character things where as long as you're wearing the right costume, it's mostly fine. It's the Lenore Skenazy, by the way. She kind of trademarked the whole free-range kid. I had her on my show, I think, twice. So people should definitely jump back and check those out because she did amazing work there. So it was seeing these things. And then I ended up moving to, do you know the Free State Project?
Yeah, New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, I moved to New Hampshire and worked with people for about 2.5 years there with Child Protective Services cases and kind of getting the word out as much as I possibly could.
So this is why you're able to go to Richard Grove's house and hang out there for a while, right?
you know Richard. Okay,
oh,
cool.
Yeah. I watched he did that. What's that show he does in the basement? And everyone's wearing flannel.
the basement show. The basement show. It was me, Prep Vinat.
Yeah, yeah.
MK Lords. Like we did the first prep one. And we were on our way to go give a speech at Anarchy in NYC.
Yeah.
And, dude, that guy is a fucking encyclopedia.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing.
he on, like, no sleep. You know, it's just like, he's like, okay, all right, well, the Bilderbergs were connected to this. You see, most conspiracy folks always use the word they all the time. And so a rule I like is, you know, if you're gonna bring up a conspiracy, don't ever say they. You have to define your terms. Richard will never say they. He knows exactly who he's talking about every single time.
Well, he pulls up that brain model and makes all the connections. Like he's like a prosecutor. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's what you have to do to understand some of these things. You know, there's names, there's connections, there's families, there's history, and there's context, all that stuff. So but yeah.
Yeah, he goes super deep. So kind of going back to the family court thing. Mm-hmm. So when I was preparing you know, my book and putting it all together. At this point, I think it came out like 3 years ago at this point. You know, the book was originally something like 300 or 400 pages. And then we just kept editing to make it as simple as possible for people so that they could get at least a cursory bit of information on kind of, you know, understanding what CPS is.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just incompetence.
It's an industry,
but yeah, there's an industry behind it. There's a lot of people making money, and the great thing about bureaucracies is that no one is really evil because no one has to take any responsibility. So you can always wash your hands of everything that's going on around you.
Yeah, it's like a group, a sociopath or something. It's like everyone's part of this institution. It's like a like a corporation.
So, yeah. I mean, but you know, the fella at Walmart isn't, you know, taking away people's kids and then sticking them on drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a definite difference there. But so anyway, let's get back here. So as far as Child Protective Services, I think what we can do here is just to give people kind of an introduction here. How much on your show have you talked about CPS? Like, have you done any kind of in-depth at all?
Well, only to the extent that I did a show about Nancy Schaefer when she's uncovering possible human trafficking.
Oh, you mean when, and then she just, her husband randomly decided to kill her and then kill himself and then no one asked any questions? Yeah, that one?
Yeah, that was rather, that's.
Yeah, that didn't spook me the fuck out or anything when I read about that.
And she's the one that. Well, I found out there was one county where they're like kickbacks to a drug testing agency. You know, it's like a business. You know, they're doing these drug tests. Yeah.
So let's talk about Child Protective Services just from the intro here. So CPS was set up. The basis of CPS was started in the 1900s with progressive movements, because basically you had these, you know, progressives who believed in the scientific management. Mm-hmm. By corporate and government interests to deal with what they saw as unfit savages in this booming population in the northeastern part of America, right? And then all the way through the South and everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you had Irish people, you had black people, you had Jews, all these people who are considered lesser than, right? Thaddeus Russell, Renegade History of the United States, has done a lot of good work on this. So you had really interesting folks like Margaret Sanger, who set up Planned Parenthood, who wrote, created the Negro Project, who said, we do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Good job, Margaret. You did good work. Planned Parenthood is booming. And then you had people like Francis Crutzen, who was the second cousin of Charles Darwin, who brought in the eugenics and social Darwinist movement. And this was funded by the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. And so the idea was to essentially... through the use of murder, sterilization, the banning of interracial marriages, and the kidnapping of children, there was a plan to essentially set up proper raising of children to create proper citizens. And, you know, getting back to this question of evil, these are the same folks who would be basically giving TED Talks now. Right? They had the best intentions. They really did. You know, at the end of every TED Talk, there's always just like, and this is how we're going to make the world a better place.
It's like Bill Gates.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a bunch of sycophants that are all, cheering and going like, oh, this is great. We just use the government to, make these dum-dums think better. And with the Native Americans, they set up really obtuse tribes that didn't necessarily play a part in the actuality of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
They then pushed in reparations, but continued, they placed those reparations with especially strict rules, like, Native Americans, for instance, couldn't compete as far as businesses, right? And so you just, if you set the stage and promotion of mediocrity, excellence can never occur. And that alone can set you up in a pretty bad situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you aim for the middle, you'll get right around that. And then from there, there's also forcible sterilization of Native Americans. And then kidnapping of a lot of these kids and placing into public education. You did the same thing with black groups. That was the implementation of the Civil Rights Act. A lot of those moves were to essentially sterilize and civilize black populations. And so from 1904 to 1974, right? This is something that is really important and people just don't know. There was 100,000 people in the United States who were forcibly sterilized. 100,000. I mean, that is catastrophically high.
Well, three generations of imbeciles is enough, Carlos.
Yes, exactly. So, we had a huge amount of sterilizations, and this wasn't just black people. This was, anyone they considered kind of dumb, which is, again, watch a TED Talk or talk to a lot of liberals, you will hear stuff like, it's too easy to have a kid.
I hear that all the time, yeah.
I live in California. I run a kind of a philosophy meetup out here, and it's a common thing. It's just like, well, it's too easy to do that, and there's most of the statements are always made from a very top-down perspective. And so there's good intentions because, you know, when you're dealing with Irish people in the early 1900s who are, you know, lighting some factories on fire because they don't want to work. Like, I get getting pissed. I get it. I can get it. You know, you have a bunch of people who are just having boatloads of kids and they're outside and their parents aren't around. You know, you look at that and you go, I need to nip that in the bud. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the background for CPS, which is in my book and I've been told no one cares. like for me, it's the most interesting thing. And every editor who looked at the book, they go, you got to chop that part down. You got to cut it down. Just cut it down a little bit more. I'm like, come on, man, give it to me. But that to me is just, it blew my mind when I started getting there. But, you know, as
well, I mean, I've had it said to me a couple of times that, you know, you don't need a license to have a kid. And I go, okay, but, what disembodied angel is going to issue that license? Who would you trust with that power? And I can never get an answer.
Oh, by the way, who's going to take away our guns? Magic people with magic wands that will make them magically disappear. But what about Australia? Okay, Australia has like, what, 5 people and it's the size of 3 Texases?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a little bit of a different situation. So I get it. I mean, it's the thing where, you know, liberals who say that Donald Trump is literally a fascist Hitler set from the devil, and at the same time they want him to be able to take away our guns.
Mm-hmm.
What? But okay, so,
well, that's the old general problem of statism, you know, that's people worship the state, you know.
Yeah, they're not thinking much, but so the so CPS gets set up. And basically, you can give a phone call if you see something that you consider to be abuse. And then most of those calls go unheeded, and a certain amount of those go towards the department. The department then sends that out to different investigators randomly, and then they get sent out to go investigate a case of child abuse, mm-hmm. right? An investigator. Isn't that a sexy name? I was actually a special investigator, right? I get to put that on my little placard. It says special investigator. And all I had to do was 2 months of, well, barely 2 months of training and have a degree in sociology. Because God knows that got me prepared to have a keen understanding in child development, psychology, dispute resolution, and forensics. Yep, totally. I was good after that. Totally set. Now, when we're talking about these cases, right? I kind of alluded to it earlier, but, you know, this is anything from homeschooling to playing outside, being too fat, being too thin, you know, a lot of that. But let's set up a scenario for your audience real quick here. You're a 5-year-old kid. You are new to school. You don't really trust the adults around you. You've actually been told not to trust the adults around you. Yet, at the same time, you have to trust all these random adults as long as they work for the government, because they're fine, right? Teachers, principals, janitors, Kevin Spacey. So then I come along and say, hey, my name's Carlos. I'm from, you know, Child Protective Services. I need to talk to you. I then take you into an empty room by yourself. I set up a laptop and I ask for your consent. Not to do that thing, but to record a conversation. But apparently...
Whoa. How can a 5-year-old... I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm. 3. Yeah, you can go 3. You can go 3. You can go 3 years old.
Okay. So obviously a child cannot give consent. But that, anyway, so they've already violated that principle. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. Principles. Strong words. Strong words. These principles. These ideas. The things actually matter. So I talk to, you know, this child and ask him a series of nice questions. You know, what color do you like? What kind of food do you like? What are things you like doing? You're setting those all up. The kid is really confused. And then you start throwing in the hard questions, the more difficult questions, the more pressing matters to them, whether that is, you know, how often does your father hit you? How often does your mother hit you? How often are you allowed outside? You know, those kinds of questions. And when I'm doing this, I'm, the kid is just trying to get the hell out of the situation. So, you know, what are kids learning? Don't say no, say yes. You know, And so they'll answer questions the way I want them to answer them a lot of times. Yeah, they want, really unfortunate.
Yeah, they want to satisfy the authority figure, yeah.
Yeah, and again, you don't need malevolence for any of this to occur. We just know this is how people's brains work. I mean, I want to go back to my office and be a hero, right? This kid wants to be able to get the hell out of the situation. And I know how to drive towards an answer if I think it's right. Because, I mean, I'm led from the very get-go. You know, I have this piece of paper that says the specifics of this case. This kid is getting, let's say this kid is getting raped and there's, you know, cocaine everywhere and there's all these types of terrible things. You know, if he tells me no, none of that's happening, I'm going to be like, well, maybe it is happening. Maybe you don't know if it's really happening. You know, you start to lead to that. And we had, if you want to see this in really good sources, I mean, we found that especially with the satanic ritualistic abuse that was supposedly occurring in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. You remember that with that Michelle remembers there was 1,000 satanic ritualistic abuse allegations. But what it turned out was that Child Protective Services was coaching these accusations out of children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things came out saying things like that children were flying, that teachers were flying, that there was machetes, that Chuck Norris came from hell and killed a baby. Like really crazy, absolute nutty stuff that led to a whole $6 million case. And what was insane was that after this 1,000 satanic ritualistic abuse allegations, there wasn't one case to be shown to be true. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But no one was ever fired. And there was a 1,500% increase in federal funding to the National Center for Child Abuse. Right?
So mission accomplished.
Yeah. Because, yeah, well, with the state failure equals money.
Yeah.
Right? So that in and of itself is a really horrific situation because your evidence is can be based off of an anonymous reporter. And then that can be based off of the memory of that reporter telling a story regarding something they think they saw. You know, I was telling a friend a story the other day where, you know, I'd seen a really traumatic thing occur outside like a parking lot. It was like a thing of abuse or something like that. And I was like 14. And this is a friend of mine who I've known for a while. And I'm telling this whole thing. And I realized that while I was telling them the story, in my own mind, I was speaking from the third person. So I could see myself there, which means I was making up the memory.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I was authentic with myself going, I'm pretty sure this was right. Well, the problem is that a lot of people, when they're talking about memory, they're going, I know this is right. And then they'll hear the memory of someone else. And if you've ever played the telephone game,
yeah,
you know how bad of a situation that is.
This is where eyewitness accounts are so...
Yeah, absolute crap.
Yeah, I mean, you need cooperative evidence to suss out what's an accurate eyewitness account, because, you know, people will remember things differently, or they hear other things, and yeah, it will suggest things that they'll incorporate into their memory. Well, yeah,
and you know, the thing about it is that there will not be situations where that can always be used, right? Just like, you know, rape cases, we're not always going to be able to get secondary evidence. Sometimes it literally is going to be he said, she said type of situation. And that sucks, but it has to be okay because justice has to be made or recompense, or at least figuring out the situation to deal with as best we can. Something has to be present to deal with the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that with the state, they use a hammer for everything. So like even in family court cases where it can be incredibly difficult, let's say one of the spouses lives in another state and, you know, they're having a dispute over something like divorce. There's a lot of different factors that are going to go in there. Everything from child support to transportation to, you know, just the overall rights of the parents, things like education. And a lot of those things can't be handled by just some magistrate who randomly decides, who doesn't know anything about your case at all.
Yeah.
One day, you know what? I'm going to do this. But, you know, I have a mixture of both cases. You know, some people say that all of family court is going against the father. I actually don't think that's the case after seeing years of evidence on both sides. I've seen really crazy cases where the dad gets everything he wants. And then I've seen really crazy cases where the wife gets everything they want. But in either cases, no one seems very happy. No, and none of it seems very rational, right? Because you just get caught up in these terrible situations. So with these judges, you know, you go to these child protective services cases and everything, you know, they're checking their fucking email in the middle of conversations that are going to pertain to, you know, the rest of these people's lives. Some of these people have been waiting, you know, months to hear a court case, and they get 5 minutes with some douchebag who's really hungry, so he's going to give you a hard time today.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no flexibility or understanding really that's going on that makes any rational sense. They're wearing like Sith robes, for Christ's sakes. I mean, this is obviously outdated, crazy, you know, insanity. They have a gavel. I mean, the whole pop and circumstance, I get that some people like that stuff, that anti-rational.
In Britain, they still wear wigs.
Yeah. You know why they started wearing wigs? Originally?
No, what's the origin of that? You might remind me.
Lice and syphilis, which is pretty disgusting, right? syphilis, before we got a drug to take care of it, people's hair would actually fall out. And then lice was a huge problem as well, so you just pop a wig on top of that and you're good to go.
Yeah, there
you yeah, and by putting it in white, you can't see the lice.
Wow. I know the robes.
Disgusting.
The robes.
Absolutely gross. We still have that now.
I think the robes are supposed to connote neutrality or objectivity or something.
Or it might have been like some way to be able to easily, you know, flash yourself. And we don't know, right? Like it's like things we say afterwards, but we always end up with, you know, STDs and some other kind of disease.
But the funny thing, what your point is, these judges, they're deciding people's lives and you're just treating it. Oh, you know, when's lunch? And they're just going through these cases, not giving anyone due consideration or time to even think these cases through. It's like an assembly line or something.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that there's this promotion of, you know, when we talk about government agencies, we always talk about a few bad apples. But the biggest case that I always make is that it's this: the root itself is the problem. Right, the root itself is evil, which is why, you know, I start the book off by even mentioning the fact that I'm taking a radical position. Right, I when someone asks me if I'm a liberal or conservative or anything, I just say I'm a radical, and I'm trying to go for the root of the problem because I don't like just talking about topics. I like talking about principles, and in principle, the way by which child protective services funded, which is obviously through taxation, but then how it runs from there, the fact that it's a coercive, violent monopoly that is taking over the lives of people, there's no way to make this right? And then Nancy Schaefer did bring up some really important things as well, where, and I'm sure you probably hit on this on the show, but the 1997 Safe Family Adoption Act, mm-hmm. which rewarded $4,000 to $6,000 for every single child that is quickly removed from a home and then placed into a new house, which is where the term legal kidnapping comes from in my book. And, you know, what becomes really diabolical in these cases is that these kids are then stuck on pharmaceutical medications for two reasons. One is it's a good way to make them shut up. Honestly, like you have a kid, you know, 6 to 10 kids in one foster home. You know how wacky children act when they're put in very unnatural situations? They act pretty wacky already. I mean, a two-year-old, as much as I like children, a two-year-old will act violent even if violence hasn't been shown to them.
Yeah, I mean, I have six kids and they're allowed. And
yeah.
They're in a normal situation, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to have to raise six kids, you know, especially if they're not mine. You know, and so it's just like, all right, well, let's stick them on Adderall. And then we'll stick them on, you know, some Zyprexa or Depakote or something else to lighten the mood. And then we'll stick them on, you know, Ambien in order to go to bed. But it's not just that, because they'll get funding for that. But then you get increased funding for every diagnosis a child has. Right? That's a problem, right? So,
call that a kid, perverse incentive, I guess you could say. Or
Yeah, that would be the... Perverse incentive would be the correct term. And so I would have 7-year-old children on 7 different psychotropic medications.
Okay, that's a crime in and of itself.
Yeah.
I mean, that retards brain development. It's a a whole host of things. And like what you're describing, a situation, a child's been taken out of his home. He's in an unfamiliar environment. He's been torn away from his parents. He's set in a home with 8 or 9 other kids he doesn't know, in an environment that is threatening, and they're wondering why he's acting up. And instead of saying, I mean, that, if a kid's acting up or acting stubborn, confrontational, depressed in this environment, that is a healthy reaction to that environment, because he should be upset. And instead, yeah, they're giving him drugs, saying, let's get rid of the emotions, you know.
Yeah, there's a quote which is actually not from the person they wrote it. What is it? It is unhealthy to be healthy in an unhealthy world, something like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, trying to define what isn't and what isn't healthy in these cases is difficult because, you know, nature is a very odd thing. And speaking of essentialist claims, can always be difficult, right? Mm-hmm. I don't go so far as to say, for instance, as people I know who will say, like, you know, Adderall is the same as meth, because I don't necessarily believe that to be true. I don't think we have the findings to suggest it's actually exactly the same. It still doesn't mean it's a good idea to give it to 7-year-olds. And I could tell you that as a person who, when they were 7 years old, was placed on Ritalin, and then I was placed on a whole host of other medications that led to me, I was 330 pounds at one point because of medications by the time I was 18 years old.
No, it was just because, I mean, I know if I'd been, I mean, when I was coming, going through school, there's a lot of things where I misbehaved that if some psychiatrist got their meat hooks into me, they would have put me on drugs instead of saying, well, he's just a 7-8-year-old kid. It needs to be disciplined a little bit. It's not abnormal.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my case, just hold for one second, please. All right, seem to adjust the mic there. Yeah, in my case, you know, at 7 years old, I was just, I was a distracted kid, and they couldn't quite figure out what was going on. I just knew I really didn't want to be sitting in class.
But is that unnatural? Is that unhealthy? No. You want to sit in a classroom for 6 hours? And nowadays, no. they've taken away, and we used to have a morning break, a 20-minute morning break, and a 35-minute recess after lunch. And this is done because we're sitting in class all day.
Yeah, no, I agree. And in my case, what would happen is you get this thing where it's like, okay, well, I would act out because I wanted to be outside. And then the way that they would deal with that would by then saying, well, now you can't go outside because you're acting out. Right? And it's kind of just giving a kid Twinkies and then getting mad why understanding why he became fat. You're like, well, if you're not feeding the child with positive, you know, aspects, he's not going to act in a positive manner. Yeah. So by the time I was 12, you know, I was stuck on – they kept switching drugs on me until I just got angry and fed up one day. And I think it was in football. I got into, like, some fight. Imagine people getting into a fight at a football game. Crazy, right? You get a bunch of kids in 104-degree temperature in Texas after you don't eat for about 8 hours, and then you get them to slam each other in the head and give each other concussions, and then you wonder why one of them may punch another kid. So that was I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder because of that. And then it just kept going from there until I was about 18. Yeah, and it screwed up my heart, screwed up my liver, my brain. I ended up sleep apnea, pre-diabetic.
I mean, this is submission to this scientific dictatorship here,
mm-hmm.
right? Now all not, the experts yeah, tell yeah. all the experts are telling you, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's instead of saying, well, he just doesn't like being trapped in the classroom all day.
Yeah, absolutely. they
fill you up with psychotropic drugs, and you know. But again, this is people submitting to the experts that men in white coats are telling you this is how it should be, and they have the degree and you don't. So, you know, as a parent, what do you do?
In my case, I came from a doctor father. So that was just kind of the norm because we had 5 kids. You know, my parents have 5 kids. So it's like, okay, well, one of them is acting a little bit outrageous. Let's drug him up. And so what was fascinating was that when I got out of school, I left, you know, I was one of those kids. I didn't want to continue living in my parents' house. You know, a lot of kids do that stuff, mm-hmm. like keeping living with the parents. I was like, nope, I'd rather do anything in the world. Got out of there. I didn't have medical insurance, so I stopped going to a doctor, got off all the drugs, except for like one little like thing, and I lost like 100 pounds in a year. And now I'm like, you know, a hunch. And I was, those drugs literally retarded my ability to be able to think.
That's, because you didn't have, this is like this, you know, this whole, people are so anxious about health, having access to medical care and health insurance. As if the presumption is you need access to the system. Well, actually, you don't want to be part of that system.
The moment I lost my health insurance, I lost 100 pounds.
You got better.
That's actually, oh my God, that's a great headline. Ooh. All right. This, and by the way, I now for a living, I basically do headline writing. So for me, though, seeing that, how I was destroyed so physically by this, you know, apparatus, that's actually what got me interested in child development, and led me to the path of working for CPS. That and a guy by the name of, who I'm not a fan of now, nor is he a fan of me, Mr. Stephen Molyneux, because at the time he was doing some great work. This was back in 2005. It kind of inspired me to start talking about child abuse and child rearing practices, mm-hmm. as far as like relates to kids later on. So, that's kind of my background there. But, yeah, just to kind of sum up there, there were people who worked for CPS who had good intentions. God knows I did. There are people who were, you know, hardworking folks, and there are other people who were actually just there for a check. You know, I know a few people there who just admitted that. They're like, look, this is an easy check. I'm going to get a pension. This is great. Well, that's just not how I can live my life. And, you know, when you see a system that is so fundamentally anti-human, the only courageous thing you can do is to speak out as much as you possibly can. And that is what I continue to do today. And I think it's really important for people in your audience to, you know, if there's parents out there, to kind of learn more about what Child Protective Services is, what to do if it comes after you. I really outlined this quite a bit in my book, mm-hmm. a step-by-step process of what to say to Child Protective Services investigators if they come to your home, even how to prep your kids, all of those things. I prep them all because it's so important. Because the truth of the matter is that I get influx of emails from people, and I can't answer them all. I'm not a lawyer, you know, and even lawyers have limits on the amount of things they can answer, logistically and legally as well. The complications of cases, of course, permitting. And so I get these emails where it's, I haven't seen my kid in 7 years. Right. I did this thing wrong. This other thing happened. A lot of these cases are absolutely hopeless. I'm just going to be honest, straight up hopeless. And it all started with that initial knock on their door. And like dominoes, it just hurtled downwards. Huge spiral that led from there to the hell that they're living in now, when if they just had some reasonable information from the get-go, you know, to prepare them, they could be with their kids right now. And knowing that, it's really a little bit of lack of information. I mean, that is a shocking bit of information, but it also should teach you to not be the person who calls me. And I've had this call dozens of times. I have your book. CPS just came after me. I forgot to read the book, though.
Yeah.
And it's like I literally gave you the keys. And that's why we also, you know, I chose to make it 100 pages just so you can jump through it, get through it, and, you know, see if you get something from it.
And the key is, if they come to your door, don't let them in. You don't have to let them in.
And, nope.
Only answer specific questions, the ones you're prepared to answer, that, you know, they have no warrant. They can't get in, right? I mean, one thing you mentioned is funny is that one of the main vectors that they get the kids is through the public school system.
Yep.
So if you're homeschooling, although you might be a target, but you're depriving them the key opportunity to talk to your kids. And that's one thing that's most shocking. Most parents don't realize is they can interview your kids by themselves. You know, they go to school without your permission and talk to them. You know, and so that you're really. But when you dump your kid off at the public school, you're relinquishing much control anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much, I mean, that's a bigger problem in and of itself, but, But that's where most people learn to just submit or not question the system. And a lot of people are just gullible, and they think if they answer questions, they're helpful to these supposed authority figures, that they, people will leave them alone. You know, I got nothing to hide. I'm not a criminal, so the system's not going to treat me badly. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, it simply isn't true. And as you said, you know, with these, the way the incentive structure is built, they need a constant pipeline of kids in order to maintain funding as high as they want it to be. And they need casework. They need problems. I mean, I think they need to exaggerate just how many real, neglected children there are. They're abused and neglected children there are out there. So they have to expand the definition. And it's also, what's your definition of neglect and abuse? You know, we live in a nation of 320 million souls. There's going to be always sad cases of kids that are neglected or abused. Again, to have an agency that's devoted to it, you just, like anything, they're going to have to interpret these cases in a way that justifies their existence and their bigger budgets. You know?
Yeah.
You know? And there's also the problem, and this is a problem that some of these agencies being hijacked or being suborned by a criminal, organized criminal elements. I mean, good example would be, if you're familiar with the Franklin scandal.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Boys Town was used. And James Rothstein, the detective up in New York, who was a big investigating trafficking up in New York. He's now doing it in Minnesota, but he was put on detail in the 60s and 70s because he was originally from Minnesota, and there was a whole pipeline feeding kids in from Minnesota into New York. And he looks at some of these organizations, charities that they call them candy stores, and it's going to attract that element too. It's going to attract people if you have a bunch of vulnerable kids. And I think you've mentioned how a lot of these families that are targeted are low income, they're vulnerable, and they don't have the means or the wherewithal to really defend themselves. They're at the mercy of these agencies.
Yeah, and I've been accosted on occasion from people who want me to do like a bigger, deeper kind of conspiratorial look into this. As far as like, you know, child sex scandals and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I think there's people out there who are doing that work already.
Yeah,
You know what I mean. Like, and it's important that they are. For me, it's more a matter of like, what is it that we can see right now that we know, and then how do we kind of go from there? Because you can end up in such a dark world and so such a scary, hopeless world that you don't even have any optimism left afterwards. And when you start looking into things and it gets really rough, and I do a little chapter in my book on this, but it could have been a lot bigger, but there was just too much information. It was on the topic of medical kidnapping,
mm-hmm.
Where you had, you know, kids who are being medically tested on, foster kids, mainly because you have a whole hell of a lot of them, and you can rationalize it, you can justify it. These kids need, you know, care, mm-hmm. when in actuality this is just guinea pig testing. As well as there's quite a bit of funding as far as Medicaid fraud, where you have these children, and I was helping out a family in California and another one in Arizona, where, you know, their child was taken away, and then these doctors were just billing these kids because the kids are now wards of the state for whole hosts of different tests that weren't actually happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And making boatloads of money doing this. You know, when we look at the biggest spend, the most amount of money that the government's spending right now, people think of pork and barrel spending, right? They think of, like, you know, the highways that lead to nothing. They mm-hmm. think of the war state, and the war state absolutely is big. But Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, that's where a lot of that money's going. And if you think all of it is going towards preventative good care, I think you're hopelessly incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I would definitely get people to start looking into, and the tips you brought up already are very helpful as far as getting prepared and knowing what to do in cases of worse situations.
You mentioned that this anonymous accusation could lead to an investigation, mm-hmm. and you not even know who's making these charges against you.
Yep, exactly.
And so, these aren't necessarily criminal charges, so they say, well, it's not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. You know, these things. Or fifth, what amendment is that? Is it the fourth or fifth?
I did find in my research that they actually broke all of
them. Okay, all of them. Okay.
All of them. Freedom of speech gets knocked. Freedom of association. It's all of it's pretty bad. Yeah. So,
there's some creepy things because the people who tend to focus on CPS don't end up too well. I think Frank Wolf, a congressman in Virginia, had an investigator who turned up dead.
Yeah. Think positively, man. Think positively for me. We don't need to be reminding me of these things.
I think Nancy Schaefer is reading what she wrote about. She said the head of the Foster Parent Association in Georgia was eventually charged. Was it child pornography or something?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that element's going to flock to these areas because that's where the vulnerable kids are, and so you have to be mindful of that. But as far as your tips go, I know what you're saying is if people know how to navigate involvement with Child Protective Services, they can save themselves a whole lot of grief. And the more consciousness is there out there of their rights and how to handle it, there'll be less kids that get thrown into the system.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. This is how you as an individual can change your little corner of the world as opposed to obsessing on changing the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, 400,000 kids is quite a bit of a world. And so there is an importance in setting priorities and getting a feeling of accomplishment as well as acknowledging your part to play in the world through embracing, you know, what is within your own sphere of influence and going from there. Because anxiety can really become overwhelming when you basically are creating a number of conflicts and problems in your own mind, which you can do simply by just researching. Unless you're able to combine those things and put them together to create some kind of little successes or completions in your own life. And if you're constantly just researching and not doing anything, you're basically setting yourself up to fail. And I think a lot of people kind of know that subconsciously because then they never have to try, right? You make the problem so big that any kind of attempt is considered impossible. Mm-hmm. But in my case, maybe I can't take down Child Protective Services tomorrow. God knows I'm not bringing down public education tomorrow, which is just as big a problem as CPS, if not way bigger. But I have met parents who, you know, through my mutual friend, Brett Vinat, who does School Sucks podcast, who decided not to stick their kids in public education, instead decided to homeschool. And I've met people on my end who, you know, CPS came to their door, they knew exactly what to do, and now they don't have a case. And I know countless parents who've just messaged me and just go, hey, your tips really worked. I don't have this case anymore. And knowing that, you know, there's parents out there who used what I told them and, you know, when their kids are getting taken away, that's pretty good. You know, maybe I'm not the one who's going to crack, you know, the Pizzagate or whatever, you know, scandal that comes up. It's possible I just won't. But I know what I can do, and I'm pretty damn all right at it. So I'm glad I have that sphere and that I can control that and influence people in a positive way. And that's really become my life mission over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it has some practical effect because you see those people, flesh and blood individuals whose lives were saved and their children's lives were saved because they took your advice. So it's got to be, you know, in a world as of ours, which can be very disillusioning, very demoralizing, you know, that helps.
Absolutely, it does, man. Yeah, well, it was a really enjoyable conversation. I need to depart, unfortunately. I wanted to know if you had any more questions for me. I would love to answer.
Oh no, I mean you got to go. I'll let you go. I want to thank you for the time you gave me tonight. That is Carlos Morales. He is the author of Legally Kidnapped. Legally Kidnapped. What's the subtitle again of that? Legally Kidnapped.
Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services. You can find my book and podcast at carlosmorales.me. You can also find, of all things, my music as well. That's on there. That's a whole different side of my life that I also make money off of and really enjoy. Thank God that I have an artistic thing to do besides just writing about how crumbling the world's becoming. So
that's right. So yeah. So
yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. Thank you, Carlos. I'll let you go. I'm going to post this probably tomorrow, and I'll send you the link.
Perfect. Thank you so much, man.
Great. Enjoy your evening.
Yeah.
Bye bye.